Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get 1-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yes, hello there, and happy new year as we head towards 2023. Final show of 2022 on the sportsmediawatch.com podcast. I am the somewhat capable host, somewhat rested after a long Christmas weekend in Arizona, going all the way from Tampa Bay out to Arizona. Dramatic overtime football win from my Buccaneers as part of their local radio broadcast. Get all the way back here, still doing some Christmas stuff, even on Tuesday as we release this podcast. The 6 days of Reeves Christmas, I think, are now over. Good to be with Dr. John Lewis. You read him. You get to see all of his stuff on sportsmediawatch.com. You hear him on this podcast. Hopefully your Christmas was good. We're getting ready for New Year's. How are things, sir?
Just getting by, trying to stay warm like so many other people are, and getting ready for the new year. This is kind of the black box week, right? Nothing really typically happens between Christmas and New Year's. It's almost not really even on the calendar. So just get through this week and then get started anew in 2023.
Absolutely. And thank God we were not part of commercial air travel as the disaster continues with hundreds of thousands of people delayed, stranded, since last weekend and even into Monday, Tuesday of this week. Craziness. We wish everybody well amongst the travel nightmare, reliving planes, trains, and automobiles with Steve Martin and John Candy. Find any way you can to get home right now. Even though that one's set around Thanksgiving, it's still appropriate in and around the holidays on the travel. By the way, however you found this podcast, thank you for doing so. Whether you found us through John's site, sportsmediawatch.com, through a social media link, make sure you're following, subscribing, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, etc. We always love getting feedback from you folks. Rate us and review us. Give us a 5-star review. More people find out about the show that way. Easiest way to get us is to follow or subscribe. Now, we should say that our other podcasts that are on the feed, Tell Me a Story I Don't Know with George Hoffman, that usually has a Chicago sports media slant. It is on a little break for the end of the year, the holidays, New Year's. It will be back soon in January. It's normally on this podcast feed. And our guys have done a tremendous job ever since the summer, all the way through here to the end of the year on the Announcer Schedules podcast on this podcast feed as well, John. That is Mike Gill and Phil DeMont Mullen getting a well-deserved week off here to end the year. They'll be back in the new year as well. But you and I can't get enough of each other, I say lovingly and sarcastically. We're here to end the year out. We were not going to miss out on ending the year out, and that's why we're here on the SportsMediaWatch.com podcast. Let's begin with Christmas Eve and Christmas Day and Christmas weekend this past weekend, obviously dominated by the NFL in terms of ratings, in terms of relevance, in terms of the biggest deal. But the NBA also played a quintuple header? Let's go with that. Even if I'm making that up, 5 straight games that they played on Christmas Day. Let's start with the NFL and your thoughts. I know we do not have ratings at our disposal, but there were a lot of exciting games on Christmas Eve afternoon, a Saturday for the NFL. A tremendous finish, if not a lot of scoring, to the Steelers-Raiders primetime game on NFL Network that led into a Christmas tripleheader. John, what are your overall thoughts on the football we saw and the televising of it from the NFL this past weekend?
Well, I was a little surprised that the NFL is mum on the Christmas numbers or the Christmas Eve numbers. The Thanksgiving numbers were out the next day because now, obviously, vast national numbers from Nielsen include out of home viewing. So you're going to see those numbers the day after now, typically. I don't necessarily know that it means anything that the NFL didn't put any numbers out today, But, you know, I do think if the numbers were really, really good, you probably would have heard something, right? So, you know, I mean, I suspect that the NFL obviously dominated Christmas, dominated the NBA, but that relative to expectations, it's kind of like the midterm elections, right? You know, the Republicans won back the House, but relative to expectations, it was a disaster. And I'm not saying it would be like that for the NFL, but, you know, maybe it's the case, I would suspect, based on the fact that the most watched NBA game by far was Bucks Celtics with 6 million viewers, right? And when was Bucks Celtics on? It was on during Broncos Rams. So that tells me that there was one window on that NFL triple header that was really soft. And it was probably that awful Broncos Rams game.
Oh, horrific. Never in doubt, yeah. Blowout, you're right. And the Celtics-Bucks game was actually a very competitive game. Yeah. So obviously you're going to have people switching over.
The Celtics-Bucks game had a million more viewers than any other NBA game on Christmas Day. So that means that there were a million extra viewers during that window than there were for the primetime game with the Grizzlies and Warriors, the LeBron game in the afternoon. Now, maybe that would just have happened normally, but, you know, the Celtics are not the biggest draw in the NBA. They're not a bigger draw than the Lakers or the Warriors. So that tells me there were a lot of people who were like, you know what? What else is on?
Right.
Oh, there's this NBA game on. So
because at the same time, if I can just illuminate this, we had gotten to the Arizona Stadium prior to the Buccaneers and the Arizona Cardinals being the primetime game. And that game is literally 34-3 going to the half. It's literally 44-6. And there's no reason to watch that game, John. Yeah. Just go back to stuff with your family. Go back to a rerun of A Christmas Story or Christmas Vacation or Die Hard or whatever you're watching, or watch the NBA. There was no redeeming value left to that game. Yeah. Agreed.
Exactly. And that tells you everything you need to know, I think, about that number for CBS. So I don't think CBS is going to be doing any bragging. I suspect that that game might have had fewer than 20 million viewers, which for the holiday, for the NFL, is a pretty low number. You know, Packers, Dolphins, the NFL has never tried that 1 o'clock window on Christmas before. We really have no way of knowing what that would have done. You know, the NBA performed pretty well opposite that game, but not as well as Bucks Celtics, you know, but, you know, who knows? But nothing from Fox on that front. And then nothing from NBC on the primetime game. Nothing at all. Definitely up from last year because the primetime game was on NFL Network. But, you know, maybe the primetime game was on the lower end of what you would see for Sunday Night Football this season. I mean, I don't know if that's true, but maybe. So, you know, I mean, again, it might not mean anything that the NFL didn't put out any Fast Nationals today at all. But certainly the NBA did. The NBA put out Fast Nationals as soon as they could from this morning. And the NFL, nothing. So
I will be curious
tomorrow.
Sure. I mean, interrupt. I'd be very curious to know what that Cowboy Eagles game did leading into Christmas Eve in the Eastern and Central time zones, like you theorized, where people are trying to go to a church service, where people are trying to go to dinner, being around with their family. How well did a very competitive Dallas Philadelphia game do? And then obviously, as I mentioned, it was not a great scoring night, a lot of defense in the frigid cold of Pittsburgh, but a dramatic finish with the Steelers winning in the final minute. I mean, John, we didn't even get a chance to talk about this. The untimely, unfortunate passing of Franco Harris happened after we released our podcast last week. So they had intended to obviously honor him, not just his family, and retire his jersey on the 50th anniversary of the iconic immaculate reception play, which was the Raiders at the Steelers 50 years ago last Friday, December 23rd, 1972, and then Franco passed away. So it cast a pall over the whole thing. They're in mourning in Pittsburgh. I thought it was a really great job by all the networks building up to it. ESPN had a phenomenal piece on the relationship of Franco Harris and Phil Villapiano, the safety of the then Oakland Raiders, and how their 50-year friendship grew out of that play where the Steelers won heroically, and how Villapiano and Franco Harris would stay in touch all year long, but in particular in and around December 23rd and Christmas. Mm-hmm. And that again, and they were so looking forward to seeing and being around each other for this game and being around each other in Pittsburgh. And then Franco unexpectedly passed away, and Villapiano followed through and was at the makeshift shrine. John, I don't know if you saw this. ESPN showed it on their feature. He was at the makeshift shrine on Friday afternoon prior to the Saturday night game with Franco's son, Doc. What an emotional thing to be there with him, hugging on him, encouraging him. And so you had all that as the backdrop. You had a great finish. I just wonder, we're speculating. I know you said to me a week ago that on Monday Night Football on Christmas Eve, the audience was somewhere around 8 or 8.5 million the last time we had it on. I just wonder if that NFL Network game got to that. Yeah. We don't know the answer. I wonder if it got to 7, 8, 9 million on Saturday night. My speculation is it might have, just because of the dramatic finish and the Franco backdrop and all the attention for the game. A thought from you on that real quick?
I mean, it's hard to say, you know, because, I mean, it was Christmas Eve and it was a Saturday night. Saturday night is still the least watched night of the week, even in the out-of-home era. You know, it's just tough to tell. Like, I mean, the Franco Harris story, I mean, Franco was always going to be the story for this week. It was really about him to begin with. You know, would that have made more people tune in? I don't know. I mean, when tragedies happen, people do tend to tune in for the tributes, like with Kobe Bryant. That was the most watched the regular season game in the NBA and ESPN in many years. So, you know, it might have had an impact in that way. But, you know, I would not have high expectations. Christmas Eve plus Saturday night plus two bad teams, you know, it'd be tough to expect a particularly strong number there.
Yet Pittsburgh won the game and they're on the fringe outside looking in, but still alive for the AFC playoffs by the win. And whatever with the football gods, cosmic coincidence, divine intervention, the Steeler fans believe it's still immaculate that 50 years later, they beat the Raiders in the final minute on a touchdown pass, 13-10 in this game after beating them 13-7 in the game 50 years ago on the Franco Harris play. That's crazy that it happened 50 years later and it's 13-10 this time for that win. I'll be curious as well on whether or not Packers Dolphins did well at 1 o'clock just because of the Aaron Rodgers factor and Miami is good and in the playoff hunt. And then you had the Tom Brady factor, even though it was a bad game. I get it. It was a low scoring bad game for a lot of it, but it ended in overtime. I'll just be curious to see those numbers. I know you got some more thoughts.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to quickly note the last time Christmas Eve fell on a Saturday night, NFL Network had the Saturday night game that year. It was Cincinnati and Houston and it was 6.3 million. So that's relatively low for NFL Network. I mean, granted, it's actually higher than what they got on the Saturday night the following year, which was December 23rd. But, you know, I mean, that's kind of the range that I would expect, but we'll see. As far as, you know, Rodgers and Brady, they're two big stars. People love to hate them. They love to hate LeBron James. They love to hate Serena Williams. They still tune in. These are the biggest stars. I think they could certainly, you know, the only reason to tune in to the Bucks Cardinals is Tom Brady. I mean, there's no other reason to
absolutely
tune in. So, you know, same thing with Packers Dolphins. I mean, all due respect to Tua, you know, the Dolphins have a little bit more star power and they're a pretty good team, but you know, those are the people that folks tune in to watch. And we'll see, you know, with LeBron, it's, I do suspect that the Lakers have finally gotten to a point where they're so bad, people might not tune in for them the same way. I mean, I haven't seen the numbers bear that out quite yet, but it is worth noting there were five games on Christmas. Three were up double digits. Two were down double digits and hit multi-year lows. The two that were down double digits were one involving the Lakers, one involving the Golden State Warriors, the two biggest draws in the league who have underachieved all season and are both shorthanded. So there's a limit to what people will tune in for, even with the stars. Brady, because the Bucks are in that horrible division, they're still in the playoff chase. Their games still matter. Rodgers, I mean, the Packers are right back. I think, what are they, 500, maybe 7-8?
They're on the fringe, right. They need help, but that win helped them. So there was a bit of a storyline there as well, and he's a brand name. We know that. People will tune in.
So, I mean, it's a very different thing for those two teams because they're in contention. They can make the playoffs still. They're still relevant. And, you know, if the Bucks hold on and win their division, they have a home playoff game. Who's to say they can't make it to the divisional round?
Now you're singing my song. Because I got Christmas to pay for, orthodontics for twin teenagers, college funds. Let's get some playoff checks going. I like how you're thinking, John Lewis. I like where you are at the end of 2022 here on this. That's a good thing. I'm just curious for you. I'm not going to put this in love it or leave it, but we did mention that ESPN and ABC ran all five games right in a row, back to back to back to back to back, if I got all five in there. And for a network to do that, where they basically put things on NBA autopilot for a 12-hour block, literally. How much of that did you dip in and out of? I have to confess, I only saw a little bit of the NBA because I was watching some of the NFL, and then we were having to go. We were traveling to the stadium, going to the stadium, getting food, doing radio duties. So, and obviously for the evening games, I did not see the NBA. But did you find yourself dipping in and out? And do you think that will maybe have helped with ABC overall in the analysis of the numbers, that if you turned it on at noon, it was on at 2 Eastern, it was on at 6 Eastern, it was on at 10 Eastern. It was just on all day.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly think no need to you know, channel surf. That's always helpful. I think that 10:30 game was the least watched of the day, of course, but it did a lot better. It was up 64% year over year. Last year was a Mavericks Jazz game that didn't even have Luka Doncic. That's another thing to keep in mind. You know, the NBA last year, really ridiculously shorthanded games. You know, a lot of stars are missing because of the COVID stuff. So, you know, there's certainly a little bit of a caveat there, but 64%. And I do think that, you know, that was the game I watched the most of because it was after everything was over and it was something else to tune into. You know, I think having all five games on ABC was a big hit. I think anytime you can average 4.2 million viewers, 4.3 million over the course of 12 hours. I mean, even if it takes two networks to get there, that's an amazing thing to be able to do opposite the NFL. There's not a lot of other sports. And again, Christmas, out of home, two networks. But there's not a lot of other sports that with regular season action can maintain 4 million viewers over 12 hours opposite three NFL windows. There's just not. And, you know, the NBA's taken a lot of hits over the past few years with their ratings. The ratings have been down. I mean, there's no doubt about that. There's no aspect of the NBA rating story that isn't a less successful story than it was 4 or 5 years ago. But, you know, there's a lot of people taking cheap shots at the NBA's ratings because they don't like the Black Lives Matter on the court in 20 or the activism, or they don't like LeBron or whatever. You know, the fact is the NBA showed its strength as a TV property on Christmas. 4.3 million viewers over the course of 12 hours opposite three NFL games. You know, I don't even know that baseball can do that in the playoffs unless it's a World Series. So I think it was a good night for the NBA. Next year will be much more complicated. They can't run all five games on ESPN and ABC next year because there'll be Monday Night Football. Christmas is on a Monday, only the second time, by the way, since the current arrangement began. So 2006 and 2017. So what I think you're going to see next year on Christmas, Fox will have a game. Fox is contractually mandated to have a Christmas Day game whenever it's possible. So Fox will have a game, probably 1 o'clock again. NBC, I think, will have the midday game. I say this because NBC has not aired a Sunday night game on Christmas Eve. They've had two chances. Neither time did they do it. In 2006, they aired a Christmas Day game at 4 or 5 o'clock. Eagles Cowboys did really, really well. That was a big TO game and everything. Mm-hmm. 2017, they did a Saturday night, Sunday night football game, and they had a Christmas afternoon game as part of their Thursday night package. So they had the Saturday night game for SNF, and then on Christmas Day they had let me make sure I'm right about that, by the way. Yeah, they had a simulcast with NFL Network on Christmas Day afternoon. Obviously, they don't have the Thursday night package anymore, so I think they'll just do the Christmas Day afternoon game as part of the Sunday night package this year.
Interesting. So yeah, they won't do it as a Sunday night Christmas Eve, and you're making it seem as though it's NBC's option in that case on when they want to do it. And you may have more info. I'm just speculating here. It's obviously written in the agreement that it's their choice. They can do it one or the other, and they're choosing to do it, you would think, on a Monday afternoon leading into Monday Night Football on Christmas Day versus Christmas Eve, Sunday night, the night before, is what your point is, what your thought is.
Well, I think the NFL calls the shots. I mean, I think if the NFL said you have to air a game on Inauguration Day while the president is giving his speech, they would have to do it, right? So I think the NFL is deciding we don't want – I'm sure NBC has
– Yeah, but I mean, but the NFL ran a Christmas Eve game on a Saturday night. Mm-hmm. Why would they not run a Christmas Eve game on a Sunday night? They have twice before, as you mentioned on that list. I don't know. Maybe they just because it's Sunday?
Right.
I mean, they ran it on Saturday night. They just did it. Right. They just
I
did
think,
it.
I think the reasoning is that NFL Network games are a little bit more expendable and they don't have to concern themselves with the ratings as much. But right. with a Sunday night package, they want to maximize those numbers whenever they can. So I do think you'll see.
Do we really think a Monday afternoon Christmas Day game would get better numbers than a Sunday night Christmas Eve game? I don't know. That's great. That's a great back and forth 100%. Question for 2023. You believe you're so 100%. Confident. I can see the look on your face. The audience can't see it. You did not hesitate to look at me and go, you don't know what you're talking about.
Well, that's not quite what I'm saying. But, you know, I do think that Christmas Day, the ratings points that are available all day compared to Sunday night, Christmas Eve, people are going out
right.
for Midnight Mass, like we talked about. You know, there's a reason why they didn't do that. Like 5 years ago in 2017, they had NBC do a Saturday night game on December 23rd instead of Christmas Eve night. You know,
and interesting. So
to me, I think it's either going to be that Saturday night, and I don't think it will be because that was not a good draw. Or it and with the Saturday night game, you don't get a flex. I mean, you don't get a flex either way, but you know, better to have if you're stuck with a stinker. Even Broncos Rams, I mean, I don't know what that number will look like, but it'll be a much higher number than if that game was.
I would be shocked if the number's not at least 15 million because right. the NFL standardly on network TV is going to get that even with a blowout game. So. The gamblers, the fantasy footballers, yeah. all of that. The one game we haven't mentioned, and we're going to move on to the college football playoff. And then I didn't mention this earlier. We're going to do some love it or leave it around John's end of the year awards, who he's loving it with. Stand by for that on the sportsmediawatch.com podcast. But the one more game is the Monday night Chargers Colts game. What did we deserve in this 2022 year to have the Colts in primetime yet again, just kind of like the Denver Broncos over and over again? Is this just abuse at this point to keep showing them? I can't believe that number was very good. Joe Buck was making fun of the game in the second quarter, singing like the 12 Days of Christmas, except talking about all the interceptions, all the punts, and all the other things and singing. And Troy Aikman kind of chuckled like, you just got away with slamming the game we're doing because it's Chargers Colts. I can't believe that one did very well on the night after Christmas.
No, it almost certainly didn't. Probably close to a season low, but we'll see. You know, no expectations for that game at all. But I do want to go back to the thought before, because I was mentioning next year's Christmas schedule, because I was mentioning it in relation to the NBA. So Fox will have the 1 o'clock game. I think NBC will have the 4:30 game. And then ESPN and ABC will have Monday night football on Christmas night. So there's no doubt about that, that ESPN at least will have it. So the question is, does the NFL use Christmas night as one of their ABC ESPN simulcasts next year? If they do, then the NBA cannot have a primetime game on ESPN and ABC. That brings in probably TNT. The last time and the only other time in the five-game era, so the NBA started doing five games on Christmas in 2008. The only other time that Christmas fell on a Monday during that period was 2017. ESPN had a noon game in the NBA. ABC had 3, 5:30, and 8. And then TNT had a 10:30 game. I suspect what will happen, and that was back when Monday night was just on ESPN, no ABC simulcast. I expect what will happen is that ESPN and ABC will simulcast the first three NBA games leading into Monday Night Football on both networks, which means the NBA will have to be on TNT for a doubleheader that probably will not do very well because it's, you know, one network opposite the NFL on two networks. So I do think this year it all worked out really well for the NBA from a ratings perspective. They were able to get ESPN and ABC all the way through. Next year will be a little bit tougher, I think.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, good enough on that. So let's move on to the college football playoff, and the two semifinals will be the Fiesta Bowl and the Peach Bowl. Fiesta Bowl has Michigan TCU. Michigan is the Big Ten champs. TCU is the Big 12 champs. It is Georgia is the SEC champs against the at-large Ohio State Buckeyes in the Peach Bowl in the nightcap. Those will be on Saturday. We're going to get into those now. I should make mention, we were in the desert of Arizona. The game will be played in the same stadium, State Farm Stadium, where we played on Sunday night with Buccaneers Cardinals. So I was right down on that field, and now 6 days later, it's Michigan TCU. When we drove by in Scottsdale out on Saturday night, the Michigan 18-wheeler and a lot of the Michigan setup was already there in Scottsdale getting ready for the Michigan football team to be there and for the whole week of them being there and TCU being there, Texas Christian University for the Fiesta Bowl, and obviously Atlanta's Mercedes-Benz Stadium in the Atlanta area, not far from Athens, an hour away for Georgia. Ohio State will also descend on the weekend in and around that Peach Bowl as well. So I'm curious, John, what your thought is on how these numbers will do. We've seen previous occasions where the semifinal games have fallen on New Year's Eve as they are. Now, in this case, New Year's Eve is a Saturday, not a work day, not a typical weekday. So, John, give us some historical perspective and what you think might happen with these matchups coming up.
Well, you know, it's going to be tough to gauge. I mean, these are not the most attractive semifinals. I know Ohio State is there, but you know, I mean, what are the odds? Do you know the odds off the top of your head for
in both cases? It is Michigan favored by a touchdown and Georgia favored by a touchdown.
Just a touchdown for
correct.
Georgia? That's amazing. I mean, correct. If they could get, I mean, all that matters is good games, and college football gives us good games every single weekend, except of course in the playoff when they give us stinkers year after year, right? You know, that's really all that matters. Last year, you go back to last year, the two least watched semifinals of the playoff era. I think maybe not the two least watched. There might have been one lower, but certainly on the lower end of what we've seen for the semifinals last year. And, you know, it was Alabama.
And correct me if I'm wrong. Those were Friday semifinals, correct?
Yeah,
or Friday. Correct me if I'm wrong. No, were they New Year's Day, but they were also on Saturday? Am I right? I think so. I think they were New Year's Day Saturday in that case.
Last year?
Yeah. Help me with the dates.
No, last year was New Year's Eve. Last year was New Year's Eve. And it was last year was New Year's Eve and a Friday. So these were last year's semifinals, the second and fourth least watched semifinals.
Mm. And that was Alabama, Cincinnati, and then Georgia obviously throttling Michigan in the nightcap.
Yeah. And there would be no undercount involved because by December 31st of last year, Nielsen got its act together. So those are the real numbers. You know, look, I mean, Alabama, Cincinnati, who even remembers that game? Georgia, Michigan, who even remembers that game? The semifinals all too often are very forgettable, very uninteresting. And, you know, I don't necessarily have much of an expectation. Now, the way TCU played in the Big 12 title game, that was really exciting. And it's not like they were playing, you know, nobody's. Kansas State had a great season this year, top 10 team. If you get a really competitive, high-quality game between Michigan and TCU, one, that'd be rare. We just don't get that. I mean, really good playoff game, I think, was LSU-Clemson, right?
Now, LSU, I think, routed them. I think LSU routed them. If you're talking about the Joe Burrow year, they beat them badly, yeah. I think. You're thinking, hold on, you're thinking maybe the LSU championship game with Clemson.
Yes.
Was that not the championship game?
You're right.
LSU, off the top of my head, LSU routed whoever they played in the semifinal, I think.
Right. They beat up Oklahoma. I was thinking about Clemson, Ohio State.
Yes. Because that was the controversial close game with Clemson, Ohio State. And I believe that was the Fiesta Bowl.
You know what's amazing? Because I actually have in my little Excel spreadsheet, I create all these very fancy, nice looking Excel spreadsheets that I only look at. And I have the margin of victory in them. In all the history of the semifinals, there's only been two or three games decided by single digits. So Ohio State, Alabama in the Sugar Bowl in 15. And then the double overtime Georgia-Oklahoma Rose Bowl in 18, and then Clemson-Ohio State in 19. That's it. And so
that's amazing. So all of them have been double digits except those three.
Yeah, on the margin 21 and 23 last year, 17 and 21 the year before, 35 LSU over Oklahoma, Clemson and Alabama winning by 27 and 11 respectively the previous year, Alabama by 18, Alabama by 17, Clemson by 31, Clemson by 20, Alabama by 38, and of course, Oregon by 39 over FSU in that humiliating Rose Bowl. So, when it comes down to it, it's not been good TV, that's for sure. So if they get good games, that's really all that will matter, even more so than the teams involved.
One more speculative thing. What if, shoulda, coulda, woulda, it didn't happen. USC didn't beat Utah in the Pac-12 title game. But if USC had won, we know they would have been in the playoff. And we know now that Caleb Williams won the Heisman Trophy. So you would have had a USC Michigan like de facto Rose Bowl, not in the Rose Bowl, because they would have made USC as the number three team and put them in the Fiesta Bowl against Michigan. If that had been so, now that would have reversed things, because Georgia would have played TCU in that instance, and Georgia TCU would have gone first, probably in the Peach Bowl, and USC and Michigan would have gone in prime time Saturday night, New Year's Eve night. How much of a difference could that have made in my hypothetical, in that scenario for audience? Would it have made that much? What's your thought?
I think Michigan-USC is a great matchup. We know that nearly beat the national title game back in 04, back when USC was left out of the top two, even though they should have been in there. So, that's a great matchup of marquee, programs. And it's also not solely in the South and Midwest, get a little bit of the West Coast in there. That would have been great, if it had been a good game. That's really what matters more than anything. It's got to be a good game. You had Alabama and Notre Dame in a semifinal 2 years ago, and it didn't do that well for a Rose Bowl.
Sure.
Because it was a blowout. So that's really the only thing that matters, is the quality of the game. You get two really good games. You get Tulane versus, Illinois State. And, if it's a good game, right? I mean, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but
I understand the point.
Well, that's the only thing that matters.
And USC brings in a different hate factor, love hate factor, with San Francisco, Denver, Phoenix, Seattle, the Pac-12 markets care more about that. Sorry, they don't care about TCU and Michigan. Seattle, I don't think so. San Francisco, Denver, Phoenix, LA.
I will say this for TCU.
I don't think so.
TCU is the closest thing to a Cinderella that's been in the playoff other than Cincinnati last year, because Cincinnati was actually from a group of five conference. But, TCU is not only a non-traditional team, even though they're in the Big Ten or Big 12. They are a team that has had that underdog aspect before. They were like Coastal Carolina a few years ago, they were when they first really came on. And this is college sports. In basketball, you don't typically want the underdog to make the actual final, right? You like them the first few rounds, and then you want your blue bloods at the end. But I do think if TCU were to beat Michigan and advance to the final, and they were to be really close, it was exciting like that Big 12 championship game was, I mean, you could see strong numbers for that. I mean, I know TCU is not a particularly high-profile program, but the underdog factor.
As a reference, they did have an unbeaten season and beat Wisconsin in the Rose Bowl, very famously, not in the BCS Final Two. They were left out of that, but they got to the Rose Bowl as an unbeaten team, got in it, and won it. So this could kind of be a similar upset-minded situation for them. I mean, again, ESPN, the college football playoff people, the advertisers, they're not going to put out a press release. They're not going to announce this with a megaphone. They don't want TCU in the championship game versus Michigan. They want Michigan in the championship game, if it can happen. Now, if it works out that TCU's there, so be it. And it is the Dallas-Fort Worth market. But the Michigan hate factor, again, in the upper Midwest will help drive that. Michigan, a national brand. Let's see.
And I mean, let's see what happens. You never know. We could get Ohio State, Michigan. I mean, that is still possible.
Sure.
It's just that Georgia, you know, those SEC.
And teams. Like you said, you hope that it's Ohio State, Michigan, and not Ohio State, TCU. Because if it's Ohio State, TCU, that's an even bigger nightmare, right? For the for the college football playoff and for ESPN.
But I said on the record in an interview with Bill Shea that I thought that if you got Ohio State, TCU, it might be better to have that even than Georgia, Michigan.
Really? Okay.
Well, a lot of people disagree with me, but. My perspective,
your reason for that is?
Well, you get Georgia, you get these SEC teams in there. They just beat up everybody. The games aren't good. It's a huge rout. So my perspective is, one, if Ohio State beats Georgia, that means they must be really, really good. And two, I think the potential for a competitive game is higher if the SEC is not in there. The SEC teams just run everybody over.
Mm-hmm.
And so my thought is, if it's Ohio State TCU, maybe you get a really good game. Maybe it's down to the wire. Ohio State, Michigan is what you want. But my thought is if Georgia's there, they're probably going to rout whoever they play.
I think Michigan, I'm no Michigan guy and I live in the South. I think Michigan can hang with them. I don't think TCU can hang with Georgia. But it presupposes that they've got to beat Ohio State in the first place, which is your point.
Right.
And we'll see.
Look, I'm biased by the fact that Michigan Georgia happened last year and Georgia won by 23 and it was unwatchable and it didn't do that well in the ratings. That is the principal thing.
I don't think Georgia's as good defensively as they were last year. I think Michigan is better offensively. I think you have a real chance at having a close, which is your point, championship game that's not a runaway. Of course, I say that, and Michigan gets beat 56-12. Yeah, so I don't know. But
what was the score? What was the Ashley Simpson game? USC over Oklahoma, 55-14, right? USC 55.
Yes, where they scored touchdowns coming off the bus, as I recall, with Matt Leinart and Reggie Bush and those weapons. I think you're right. And you called it the Ashley Simpson game. What was she, the halftime show?
Yes,
and
she was
epically bad. I don't recall that. I blocked that out of the memory banks.
Jessica Simpson's sister.
I know that. Is it worse than her being outed with lip syncing to the song on Saturday Night Live that started skipping and playing over and over again, and she ran off stage on live TV? Was it worse than that at the Orange Bowl? It couldn't have been that much worse. I don't know.
You know, she was a regular on Seventh Heaven at varying points.
She's not a regular on anything anymore. It has come and gone for her. It's the truth. Yeah, are we speaking the truth or not on the podcast? She's not a regular on anything anymore. And I think the Saturday Night Live bit had something to
do with
that.
Nobody on Seventh Heaven is a regular on anything anymore.
That's another fair point on that. All right, so good stuff on the playoff. One wrap-up thing, which is the NFL playing on New Year's Day, and then the college football traditional New Year's games are now going to be on Monday, where they don't really have relevance, obviously, towards the college football playoff or the championship. This has happened before. Do you think it takes a hit? Again, that the college football is on Monday afternoon, Monday night, where you're seeing the Rose Bowl and the Sugar Bowl. And
well, you're not going to see the Sugar Bowl Monday night because Monday Night Football is going to be there Monday night.
Football instead, right?
The Sugar Bowl is going to be on the 30th of December or the 31st at noon.
Right.
So they really got hosed. And this is another way that the NFL is, you know, throwing its weight around. Because Week 17 is no longer the final week of the season, you get a Monday night game there. In previous years, when Week 17 would take place on New Year's Day, all the games were done New Year's Day. So the Monday ESPN would have the ability to run the Sugar Bowl as normal. That's different now. So obviously the Rose Bowl will lead into Monday Night Football, which is great for the NFL. The NFL gets to kind of rob college football of their day and then rob college football of their alternate day and benefit from that Rose Bowl lead-in, which is better than anything Monday Night Football.
So let's keep it straight that it actually will be a Friday night Orange Bowl. Hello on the 30th, Tennessee and Clemson, the orange versus orange, two different shades in the Orange Bowl. Then, as you mentioned, noon Eastern, 11 a.m. local time, they're showing the Sugar Bowl, Alabama, Kansas State prior to the two semifinal games that will be coming for that Saturday. And then on Monday, they will have the ReliaQuest Bowl that I'll be working on local radio before we're back again in the new year, Mississippi State and Illinois. I'll be calling the play-by-play of that on local radio for that matchup. Also, the Cotton Bowl Tulane USC will play at 1 Eastern, 12 local time. The what is the Citrus Bowl, the former incarnations of the Citrus Bowl, is also playing that afternoon. The Cheez-It Citrus Bowl, thank you, at 1 Eastern time. And then it's a standalone for Penn State and Utah in the Rose Bowl. And you're right, that leads into the Monday night football game. And I'm trying to get it as quickly as I can. What is the Monday night game for
Bengals,
next week?
Bills.
That's a massive one. What do you think those two numbers will be for Penn State, Utah, followed by Bengals, Bills? They finally get a great Monday night football game. What do you think there?
Probably around 15, 16 million, maybe even 17 million for Penn State, Utah. I go a little bit higher because of that NFL lead out. And then the most watched Monday night game of the season, probably I would expect something around, what was the first one in week one? Week one was
Denver, Seattle. Russell Wilson's return was week one, was it not?
19.8 million. So I think this will be 22, 23 million because of the.
Are you saying that Joe Buck is not going to sing the 12 Days of Christmas again, making fun of the game for Bills and Bengals? Not likely, right? Not likely.
No. I think Joe will play it straight.
Okay, let's get to it. We've got something to cover here at the end.
Love it or leave it.
So John has his awards here for the very end. So these will all be love it's. Give me some love it's. Give me the sports media story of the year. Do you have one of those?
Obviously, I'll steal from everybody else and just say all the announcer movement. You mentioned Joe Buck. We were just talking about him. Joe Buck works for ESPN. I don't think anybody would have thought Joe Buck and Troy Aikman would work for ESPN when the year started. Al Michaels to Thursday night had been in the works for a while. That's not a huge surprise, but working with Kirk Herbstreit kind of is. And, of course, all the other offshoots of Buck's move, like Joe Davis becoming the voice of the World Series on Fox and Kevin Burkhardt getting the lead role for the NFL. I mean, there's a lot just in that. So tremendous hot stove this year in the NFL, and something we're probably not going to see again for a while.
Yeah, there was a lot of interesting movement and a lot of money being thrown around as well. All right, next one. Here we go.
Love it or leave it.
How do you want to phrase it? The sports media person of the year? Is that what you want to use here on Love It? Who are you loving for 2022, John Lewis?
Well, let's not say person of the year, because I mean, I guess that'd probably be Pat McAfee. Okay. And I will say, you know, one of the things with McAfee, he's destined to be, I don't want to say hated, but he's so ubiquitous that it's inevitable that it's going to turn, the reaction to him is going to turn negative, because he's everywhere. He's all over the place, and ESPN is shoehorning him in. That whole, the outfit he was wearing at the Las Vegas Bowl, it's just inevitable that people are going to turn on him probably very soon. But certainly he would be the person of the year in terms of everything that, you know, his bursting onto the scene. My person of the year thing is not quite the person of the year, but just some people I took notice of. I'm actually going to start really, really small, like so small that a lot of people probably won't even know who I'm talking about. But I'm going to say a Marvin from the Dan Patrick Show, right? I'm going to start there. So the Dan Patrick Show is something I've been watching a lot of this year. And Andrew Perloff, a.k.a. McLovin, left to go do his own CBS show. And so, you know, this is a show that relies as much on chemistry as Inside the NBA, as Fox NFL Sunday. So you take out a regular like McLovin and you bring in someone entirely new who's never done it before, and it works, and he fits in like a glove. He has that perfect sensibility for that show, where the Danettes are all nerdy to an extent. Like they're not big jocks, they're not, you know, roaring tough guys or anything. They're not particularly cool. They're kind of nerdy dads, and he fits in quite well with them. And the show not only didn't miss a beat without McLovin, I think it got better.
Interesting.
Without McLovin, which McLovin was good, but it got better without Perloff. it's better now with Marvin. So I wanted to take note of Marvin from the Dan Patrick.
And I have to say, I don't see the Dan Patrick Show any longer because I don't have it on Peacock, et cetera. I hear it occasionally, but you're right. I mean, he's going on like 16 or 17 years now with that show with Paul Pabst and Seton and Fritzy and those guys. So they are as much the Danettes a part of that chemistry. So you're right. That's good stuff. On that, it's amazing to contemplate that Dan Patrick's been doing that show now.
Yes,
in that form, away from ESPN, almost for longer than he was at ESPN.
Yeah,
start contemplating that.
Indeed.
Wow. Indeed.
So you know, I wanted to make mention of Marvin, and also how about Joe Davis? We all know. I mean, everybody knows Joe Davis had a great year, banner year for Joe Davis, but certainly making a name for himself and voice of the World Series. And getting some really great NFL games this year as well. So Joe Davis is another one. That's actually it. I should probably have come up with more, but those were just the two that came up, that came to mind. Joe Davis and Marvin from the Dan Patrick Show.
All right, we've got another one.
Love it or leave it.
You also wanted to do newcomer. You have a newcomer. Marvin would have qualified. Do you have another newcomer that stood out on your sports media awards to end 2022?
Let me think about it, because that's actually who I meant was Marvin on the newcomer side.
Well, Joe Davis would have qualified for the bigger assignment with the NFL, although he's now been in that role. He had been doing the NFL before. They just elevated him.
Right.
On that one.
Why don't we do this? Herb Street
doing the NFL. Yeah. Thumbs up on Herb Street's Thursday night work on the Amazon Prime? Would you give that a thumbs up or a lukewarm?
I think Kirk has been completely competent on Thursday Night Football, which is all you can ask of someone doing something they've never done before, is competence. Do I think he's been good? I think he's been good. It's kind of a thankless role. You're getting bad games every week. Al Michaels clearly doesn't like the schedule, and Kirk is doing as well as he could possibly do. I wouldn't have thought to like praise him in like a year ending setting. You know, because ultimately, I don't think that Thursday Night Football job allows for the level of work necessary that you can't. It's like being great on the Lakers. You can't do it. You can't be great on the Lakers. And I don't feel like, you know, he's done as good a job as he could possibly do within the limitations that schedule creates.
I'll give you one. See if you don't agree with me, because we talked about this earlier. Once ESPN reclaimed the National Hockey League, I had not ever heard Bob Wischusen of ESPN on hockey. And you and I discussed this back in April, May, when he began doing NHL playoff games with Brian Boucher. Yeah. You used the word, it was a revelation listening to him do hockey. I'll steal your word now and bring it back. I thought he was tremendous. It turns out he had done local radio hockey in New York, doing the New York Rangers, even doing a little local TV. And Bob is very talented. They had him on the Announcer Schedules podcast earlier this year. Great interview to go back in the archive. Search that through the archive on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Announcer Schedule, right here on this podcast feed. Talking to Bob, who's versatile as the radio voice of the New York Jets, college football and college basketball for ESPN-TV. But I'll go newcomer of the year was Wischusen doing hockey with Brian Boucher. They were a tremendous watch and listen together, I thought, for the Stanley Cup playoffs. John, you want to piggyback on my newcomer of the year thought on that, even though it's mine?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think anytime you're coming in to do a very territorial sport like hockey or soccer, and you can do a competent job when you're known for, you know, the other stick and ball sports, the more popular ones, I think that's always an impressive feat. Wischusen was quite good. I mean, I'll be real. I didn't get a whole lot of sampling of Bob Wischusen, but watching him on that Stars Calgary Game 7 on ESPN2 back in May, he was very, very strong. So I think certainly, you know, ESPN, I don't think hockey fans were totally in love with that first year of coverage. A lot of complaints about Leah Hextall. Of course, some of that is sexism, but some of it probably legitimate as well. You know, I know they weren't huge. It didn't seem like they were huge on the McDonough and Ray Ferraro main team. But I thought Bob Wischusen was certainly one of the, you know, shining stars, I would say, of that group.
All right, one more before we get out of here.
Love it or leave it.
New Year's resolutions. Are you a love it guy or do you leave it on the resolutions? A lot of people go through these on being different in 2023 for whatever it is, trying to be a better person, trying to lose weight, trying to be more friendly, trying to be more organized. Maybe that you want to travel more, take more time off. Love it or leave it. Any New Year's resolutions? Do you leave it?
I mean, I've never even tried New Year's resolutions before, but certainly I'd love to. I'd love to be able to do a few and stick to them. All the usual ones.
Give me one. Give me one.
Not using Twitter ever again would be great.
Wait, ever again or less? I thought you were going to say less, and you said ever again.
Ever again. You know, I joined Twitter when I was 20 years old, and, you know, it was something that I needed to do for the site, and I built up a pretty decent following, 25,000, and certainly it's helped. It's gotten every guest I've gotten for my classes or for this podcast I've gotten through Twitter. But, you know, I do think on balance, it's a terrible, terrible place. Twitter is basically every horrible message board of the early 2000s, only you're always there and everyone else is there. And the number of people I respected who I've seen turn into complete clowns on Twitter is higher than I'd like to admit. And of course, I have certainly beclowned myself on Twitter on any number of occasions as well. So, you know, I'm not one of these people who is like, oh my gosh, Elon Musk took over, now I gotta leave. My feelings on Twitter are unchanged. They're the same as they've ever been. I don't know. That would be great.
Let me add this. I don't choose, I guess, the best metaphor to roll around in the mud with the pigs on all the political stuff and all the name calling. I use it more for information and for finding out things. And sometimes there's entertainment, humor, video. There are good parts of it. Can I say this in terms of loving it? There is a bit of thanks for Elon Musk spending the $44 billion because at least the veil is back now. There's been tremendous reporting now on this, but Elon Musk allowed it to happen and they kept the records and kept the receipts of just how slanted and just how obvious with the government even involved in squelching things on social media that this is. And hopefully for 2023 and beyond, I'm not naive. I mean, there are still other massive big tech entities that are within the game, within the rigged game, that don't want to change. But at least this social media app demonstrated that it's not just crazy kook conspiracy theories. All this stuff about shadow banning and squelching people that dissented was actually going on. So I think in some ways, Twitter has become a better place now that we can know that and the reporting on it. And we can know that. I thought it was interesting. Let's bring it back to sports, John Lewis, that for the World Cup, they had the most impressions and the most massive attention on anything they've ever done for the World Cup worldwide, all languages on Twitter. So that's interesting for those that thought it was going to be the disintegration of the app at the end of 2022. It actually did well by their own numbers and by their own analytics. It was massive. For the 2 weeks of the 2.5 weeks of the World Cup.
I mean, there was a lot of ridiculous hyperventilation about how Twitter was going to die out. Twitter's not going to last through the week and all this nonsense. Look, the reality is, you know, there's just nothing I can say about Twitter that would be positive. I think it's one of the worst things that ever happened to media in the history of media. I think it was always bad. My feelings about Twitter are exactly the same as they were in 2010. And they're the same as they're going to be. So that would be one great New Year's resolution. Then all the other ones, it'd be great to, you know, certainly after the holidays and, you know, how many generations of turkeys and pigs that are eaten, you know, certainly that. I don't know what else. I mean, I will.
Is there a place now? I travel a bunch. Yeah. Is there a place you would like to go that you've never been that you're setting as a goal at some point? And now you got me curious. Right. Are you going to share with us what is that place?
You know, so as you know, I went to Boston for my job last year. And look, I have not traveled since then. I have not traveled since I went to Boston for my job. So I would love to travel again. The only issue is I read that story about those folks getting seriously injured in turbulence the other day. Mm. So, you know, the plane crashing thing is scary, but it doesn't happen very often. I'm not interested in the turbulence and hitting the head. And
I'm thinking there's so many great lines in the 30-year-old movie now. The 30th anniversary was just this month, December of 1992, of A Few Good Men with Tom Cruise, Jack Nicholson, Demi Moore, everybody involved in that courtroom drama around the U.S. military. It's a phenomenal classic movie. Rob Reiner's the director. The line, the exchange with Cruise and Kevin Pollak as Caffey and Weinberg, where he says, "You got Dramamine for the flight?" He says, "I'm afraid of the flight crashing into a mountain. I don't think Dramamine's going to help with that." That's John Lewis in some parts here getting on the plane, maybe.
Well, you know, look, I mean, I didn't mind the flight. The two flights I took were both very smooth.
Right.
I just don't want to deal with any turbulence.
Okay, so take the train, take an automobile. Where do you want to go?
I mean, I'd like to go to Las Vegas. That'd be nice. Las Vegas. I'd like to go to Miami.
Yes.
Miami. I'd like to go to New York, you know. Mm-hmm. That'd be nice. New York City again. You know
what's sneaky fun to go to? Maybe I'm biased in the South. Is Nashville. Nashville, yes. It is now much more trendy, let's say, to be in Nashville, not just country music, but tech and upscale and different stuff. It's sneaky because you think like Chicago, LA, Las Vegas, New York, blah, blah, blah. I'm just throwing another suggestion your way.
You know what? I would like to go to the Kentucky Derby. Maybe I should reach out to NBC about
that. I've never been. Get us in. Can you get us in?
Yeah, maybe.
Get us in.
I'll ask NBC.
We'll go together.
See what I can do. Because, I mean, at least I don't have to fly out there. You know, I figure something more reasonable out.
Been to the Indianapolis 500. Been to the World Series. I'm not trying to brag.
I'm definitely going to brag. Chicago.
I've been to the Indy 500. I've been to the Masters. I've been to the World Series. I've been to the Super Bowl, covered a Super Bowl with my team, but I've not been to the Kentucky Derby. If we can make that happen in May,
yeah, why not?
I'm your guy. I'll be your wingman.
Kentucky Derby, Indy 500, maybe I could do both of those, but there's no way I can allow that NASCAR race in Chicago to go and come without attending. First of all, that has high disaster potential. Let me not say that because I'm going to have to go through NASCAR to be able to attend this thing probably, but I mean, it's just, I don't know how they're going to do it. I don't know how they're going to do it. A street race in Chicago. I want to go to that. I mean, that's
got F1 coming to the streets of Vegas as well. I mean, at night. So they'll figure it out. They'll figure it out.
I wanted to mention. I did not request this, by the way. You know,
okay,
because you're not supposed to take gifts from the people you cover, right? But ESPN was very kind to send me a tree topper of the Larry O'Brien Trophy in the NBA,
and
it came broken. It came with the basketball portion of the trophy broken off of the base. So
you have mixed emotions on receiving the gift. It's a great thought, and you have no use for it. Yeah.
Yeah. The thought was nice, but it obviously is literally junk because
some would say the perfect metaphor right now for the NBA, the best of intentions, but it's broken. I'm just putting that out there.
Well, you know, the biggest problem for the NBA is that the two teams that people like to watch the most are both under 500, and one of them is in complete free fall. You know, LeBron ruined the final years of his career by signing with the Lakers, and you know, no other great player is going to go to the Lakers again after they've seen what. I mean, first of all, great players weren't going to the Lakers to begin with. They're coasting on the reputation that Jerry Buss built. Jerry Buss has been gone for 10 years, and since Jerry Buss died, this team has not been good at all. They obviously, Kobe was injured, could not play particularly well, but Kobe's final years in the NBA were a joke. 15-67, the final season. They get LeBron James and Anthony Davis. And, you know, you can blame LeBron all you want for the Westbrook trade, but, you know, LeBron doesn't run the team. He clearly doesn't run the team. They're making it really clear that LeBron doesn't have a lot of say. So, like, you know, eventually you got to turn around and look at the organization. The Lakers being this bad, they're going to be the Knicks for a long time. Like the Lakers' future is the New York Knicks.
You say that, but watch them get the game changer somewhere. The next one. They always have, John. I'm older than you. Whether it's following up Jerry West and Wilt with Magic, adding to Kareem, whether it's following that up with Shaq and Kobe, You've now had LeBron, and let's not forget they won a title in the bubble.
They did.
But they always seem to get that next guy. You just don't with think Jerry there's anybody Buss. In place with Jerry West, Jerry Buss. There's nobody in place to get that next guy. I don't know.
Jerry Buss got that next guy. Jeannie Buss got LeBron because LeBron made a terrible mistake. And I don't think other stars are going to make that terrible mistake by signing on for that mom and pop. They really are run by like a mom and pop. And they have exactly the results that a mom and pop would have if a mom and pop owned an NBA team. Like if just any random mom and pop somewhere out there owned an NBA team, the Lakers experience is what they would have. But that's kind of a digression. But, you know, if you talk about the NBA, what's the NBA's biggest problem? The NBA's biggest problem is they have not developed that star beyond LeBron James and even Steph Curry yet. The good thing from those Christmas numbers is the most watched game by far was Milwaukee-Boston. And that's, in my view, as good a number that the NBA has had in a long time, because for the longest, it's been L.A. or LeBron and Golden State. L.A.'s done, and LeBron is done contending. The Warriors, frankly, I don't know that they're done, but they're not going to be there this year. They're 3-16 on the road. If they end up in the finals, it'll be even more shocking than when Boston did. So they won't be there this year. And you don't really know what the future holds. So getting, you know, those other teams starting
new blood, new blood,
really important to the league.
All right. With that, my friend, have a happy new year. We'll see what happens as all of this unfolds with the college football playoff, the second to last weekend of the NFL. Plenty to cover in 2023. Yeah. I look forward to doing it with you here.
Hey, you know what we can look forward to in 2023? Political primary debates. The presidential primary
debate. Did you actually just go there and say look forward to?
Yeah.
I think you did. See,
Trump will be in debates this year. And Trump and DeSantis will be debating. So
that's going to get very interesting. If you're waiting, if you're whetting our appetite for 2023, that's going to get interesting, but that's not anytime soon. We just know we have sports. Yeah.
A quick political comment, and it's one that you'll appreciate. Rick Scott is the Rob Pelinka of politics.
The senator from my state in Florida.
Yes, who was in charge of the Republicans' awful, awful Senate run
You know what's interesting? And we're going to get out of here in a second. The bigger deal is that Donald Trump, the former president, backed six different losing senatorial candidates. Yeah. And by design, they've admitted this and they've taken the victory lap. The Democrats wanted to run against as many Trump-backed senatorial candidates as they could. And the Democrats did everything they could to make sure that that was the opponent in the primaries. This is who we want to run against.
Yeah.
And so if we're talking about the sports metaphor, it's no different than scouting an opposing team, finding their weakness and saying, I want to throw the ball at that defensive back, or I want to isolate in the NBA that bad defensive player over and over and over again. So while we're talking politics for 2023, that was Donald Trump still trying to have his influence on the Republican Party. And he took L, and I'm showing it to John, after L, after L, after L, doing it that way, like a sports GM putting the wrong personnel out on the field.
He did get the USFL, you know, thrown out or whatever it was. He ruined the USFL.
Bankrupted. Yeah. Yes.
And imagine where the Bills would be. Well, the country might be in a better place right now, but where would the Bills be if Donald Trump had taken ownership? I can tell you they wouldn't be where they are right now based on...
Yeah, that's another fascinating one. He had a chance to maybe buy them, according to him. But in any event, we'll see what happens with politics, with sports. Have a great New Year weekend, a New Year's Eve weekend. We'll come back in the new year, you and I. Other shows returning too, with George Hoffman in the new year in January, Tell Me a Story I Don't Know. And Phil and Mike and the Announcer Schedules podcast will be back as well. John, I've enjoyed it for another calendar year on the Sports Media Watch podcast. Great stuff. We'll be reading the site, sportsmediawatch.com. Thank you, my friend. Happy New Year.
And thank you. And looking forward to another great year on this podcast, on the George Hoffman podcast and Announcer Schedules. And hopefully, a good, peaceful year ahead.
Let's hope so. For now, we're good. Happy New Year, everybody, from the sportsmediawatch.com podcast.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.